Welcome back to Tearing It Off. I'm Mirage, and I'm here with Megan. And today we're going to talk about adult sex education. How are you doing, Megan? It's been a while.
It has been a while.
We've gone on a short hiatus, unfortunately, but we'll be back in full force tonight for you.
We've been enjoying fall.
Yes, we have.
Have you gone apple picking yet?
I have not.
No.
You know, I've been enjoying fall at this radio station.
Oh, okay.
but moving on, I want to talk about adult sex education. So let's start with the fact of the day. What is the fact that you have for us today?
Well, you know how I have a fondness for months, celebrating months.
Yes, I do. Is it another special month?
It is. And you kind of already introduced it, but October is Sex Education Month.
Perfect.
And about 5 years ago, they used to refer to October as being Let's Talk About Sex Month. And it was supposed to be teaching parents how to talk to their kids about sexuality. But in the past year, they have revamped the celebration of the month so that it's just Sex Education Month.
Great. So for adults and for everyone.
Yes.
Pretty much. Okay, that's great. Is there a month that has no sexual dedication to it? I hope not.
I don't know what goes on in September.
Hmm.
Actually, no. I think on my website I have listed all of the significance of months.
Okay, well,
offhand, I can't remember, but there's like February and March has a lot going on.
Okay. Well, then everyone should head over to omegan.com if you're curious about that.
Well, that was a good plug.
That's what I'm here for. All right. Well, now that we have our wonderful fact, October is Sex Education Month, let's jump into our first question for today. What type of sex educators are there?
This is a really good question because there's two types of sex educators. I'm going to use very simple language, but there's the talk sex educators and then there's the talk and touch sex educators.
Okay. Can you go into more detail about what those are?
Sure. So the talk sex educators are the people like myself who go to do presentations or workshops and talk about sexuality issues.
Uh-huh.
And then the talk and touch sexuality educators will do presentations, usually not in large public formats, sometimes if they're lucky or if the crowd's lucky, but they'll actually do demonstrations while they're talking. So they're providing education, and instead of someone like me bringing in like my vulva puppet or my genital models, they'll actually use live people and explain things in person for the workshops.
So they explain them on models, though, not on the people actually attending the workshop. Or do they do that as well?
They may do that as well. But usually it's definitely consensual.
Right. I was just about to ask you about
that.
Of course.
Right. Because adult sex education is usually consensual.
Right. And no one's forcing these people to go to the workshops.
No.
In the first place.
No.
Okay.
So there's different types of sex educators out there around the country. Like Charlie Glickman does workshops. I really like Charlie's workshops because he does the importance of shame in terms of sexuality.
That's a big one, yeah.
It is, and it's something that people generally like, don't have shame about sex, don't have shame about sex. But Dr. Glickman talks about like the importance in terms of shame's value in shaping our sexuality and our morals, and not in an anti-sex way, but in terms of listening to yourself and what feels good and what doesn't. So Dr. Glickman does workshops like that. There's also Dorian and Marshall who do I Love Female Orgasm workshops.
Uh-huh.
That's a very popular one on college campuses.
There's a book.
They wrote the book.
Oh, they wrote the book.
They wrote I Heart Female Orgasm.
Right.
Yes.
I've definitely seen that one around on college campuses.
Yep, that's a popular one. And then there's sex educators who do the talk and touch, like Jaya. So there's Sex with Jaya, and she...
Okay.
She's a cutie, and she does sexological body work, in which she does workshops and podcasts and all that sort of stuff. But she uses live models, or she'll talk about herself a lot in terms of how her body functions. And it's a different way of approaching sex education, because usually when I'm talking, like, I don't talk much about my sexuality.
I was just about to say, it's pretty brave of her to just put herself out there like that. And I'm sure she does it obviously to educate others. I mean, I don't know her, but would you say that, is there a part of it that's, you know, a desire to exhibit herself like that, or is it really this desire to give to others?
Well, I think it's definitely both. I think that anytime someone is a presenter, there's a little bit of exhibitionism going on within them. You know, but I think that it's a different approach in terms of, like, people really do tend to learn better when they can see things going on in person.
It's
That's
true.
One of the reasons why
true.
TV is more popular than radio, for instance, because people get to another mode of learning.
I'm actually just going to plug something in there, but when I was in New York last time, I went to the Museum of Sex. It's a great museum, by the way. If you've never been and you're interested, you should definitely go in your next time you're in New York. But they have all these videos of how sex is represented in movies, and not just sex, but, you know, a bit of everything in the old days, and then for youth and things related to food. It's really great. But then there's this video, it's a pretty long and detailed video of kind of a how-to, you know, sort of video for couples. And I'm guessing it's staged in part. You have actors, but it is actually them. I noticed that there were a lot more people at that part watching that video than everywhere else. It was not scary at all. It was very friendly, very, I was going to say user-friendly, but maybe that's not the right way to put it.
That could be the perfect way to put it.
I suppose so. But it was interesting to see people's reaction to that.
Well, there's this, I don't know if you heard, but there's this new museum in Berlin that just opened up. That's a talk and touch museum.
Really?
Yeah. And so they have exhibits in which the models and their mannequins, if the participants are looking for the G-spot, like, it'll give, like, information about the G-spot and stuff like that. But then you can actually do a hands-on approach by putting your hands in the model, and if you hit the right spot, it will light up and the mannequin will be like, oh, that's the spot. So
awesome.
it's a hands-on museum. And I have the Museum of Sex magnet. I don't know if you saw, but they have posted everywhere, like, please do not mount, touch, lick, kiss, or fondle any of the exhibits. Did you see that posted?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I was there like 4 years ago. But
okay.
Yeah, I always liked that. So the Berlin Museum takes it like a step further in terms of that.
They're obviously not live models.
At the Museum of Sex, no.
But I mean in Berlin.
Oh, in Berlin, no, they're not. No,
okay.
They're mannequins. They're mannequins.
Okay, just you know, just checking.
There's this interesting blog that's up, The Real Princess Diaries, where there's a sex worker who writes about, should sex workers be able to provide sex education? Because they work with the public, they know lots of tricks. Like, lots of people will see in the bookstores, like, sex worker's guide to pleasing your man, or, you know,
right.
Dominatrix, how to top, you know, people like
you
those.
You see those for everything.
Right. And so she recently just posted about the fact that maybe sex workers should be providing sex education in terms of hands-on approach, because they have a lot of hands-on knowledge, as opposed to sex educators who do more of the talk, where they've been trained by books and discussion and not necessarily the hands-on.
Right. That's interesting. What kind of sex educator do you consider yourself?
I definitely consider myself to be a talk-only type of sex educator.
Okay. Good to know. Let's move on to our next question. What kind of training do you need, or qualifications do you need, to do what you do?
So for me, well, actually, let me back up. Anyone can call themselves a sex educator. So there's no panel that says, like, you can't call yourself a doctor unless you have a certificate that says, you know, you are a medical doctor, you got your PhD. Like, you can't do that. But in terms of sex educators, there's no regulation. So anyone can call themselves a sex educator. Now, there are some organizations like ASECT.
Right. You're certified with ASECT.
I am certified with ASECT.
Can you say what ASECT is exactly?
ASECT is the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists.
Okay.
And they're considered, like, I always refer to them as, like, the American Medical Association for doctors, but they're, like, the regulation panel for sex educators, counselors, and therapists. I chose to become certified through ASECT because I was getting my bachelor's, and I knew, as a woman talking about sex, like, people weren't necessarily going to treat me as seriously if I didn't have that certification process. So for me, it was very necessary because I knew I wanted to work with medical institutions, and I knew that I wanted to work on college campuses, and I wanted some more credibility. But you don't necessarily need to have the certification.
What do you need to do in order to get the certification?
You know, my partner is a doctor, and he has watched me go through the process of when I became certified. And he's joked that it looked harder for me to become certified as a sex educator than it was for him to become a doctor.
Really?
Yeah. So,
Wow, that's something to put on your wall.
So, if
your actual wall, not your Facebook wall.
Yeah. In terms of becoming certified through ASECT, if you have your bachelor's degree, which is what I have, you have to train for 4 years after you get out of college, providing 1,000 hours of sex education for each year. So 4,000 hours of providing sex education. Then you have to be trained for 90 hours in, I believe it's 12 different subjects. You have to be supervised for 25 hours by a certified ASECT approved supervisor.
Supervised during your sex education time? During the hours that you need to do?
Right before your certification, while you're providing sex education series.
Okay.
So that someone can monitor what content you're providing, how did you choose to create your lesson plans, how did the classes go, what was the feedback, all of that sort of stuff.
Okay.
And then you have to go for a SAR, which is a sexual attitude reassessment.
What's that?
It's probably my favorite part of becoming certified. I actually recommend people to do it even if they're not going to go into sex education, but it's a minimum of 3 day to 7 days intensive training of, not training, intensive workshop, I would say, in which you are with a group of people and there's a TV and you watch video clip after video clip after video clip of different sexual scenarios. And after each video clip, which is 30 seconds long to 9 minutes, you process how you feel about it.
How big is the group usually?
My group was approximately 8 people.
So it remains pretty small.
Maybe up to 25 tops. And okay. You do this for a minimum of 3 days, but up to 7. And it's designed to do 2 things. One, to expose you to different sexual scenarios so that if someone comes up to me and says, I like to have sex with blah, 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 but only on Monday, you know, I don't say, oh, you're a freak, because okay. I've been exposed to it. And then the other thing, and I think this is the most important thing of the SAR, is it lets you know where your trigger points are so that you don't unnecessarily influence people with your opinion. So let's say, for instance, I very rarely will go on college campuses and talk about sexual assault.
Okay.
I will bring it up in topics, but I have not ever done a workshop specifically on sexual assault.
Because your opinion on it is too pronounced?
I don't think it's my opinion. It's just a topic that's a little too close to home for me. So okay. I can't give unbiased information.
I see. Okay.
So I feel like I might be doing a disservice in terms of providing education because I'm not going to be rational or unbiased per se.
Okay, that's really good to know about yourself. I mean, I think for anyone, not just a sex educator.
Right. Yeah. So it's a very intensive process. And
yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Okay, and what other schools are there? I know there's a big one on the West Coast.
Like training to become a sex educator?
Is that what it is? I know that, at the grand event of the Center for Sexual Pleasure and Health, you had a number of guests, and Carol Queen was one of them.
Yes.
And she spoke about the school on the West Coast. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yes, that would be the Institute for Advanced Human Sexuality.
That's the one. So what is that? Can you talk about that?
So the Institute is one of the schools that provides education in terms of human sexuality.
Do you leave there with a degree or some kind of certification as well?
No, you definitely leave there with a degree. You can get your PhD in sexuality or sexology. There are different concentrations. And I've heard that it's going to give you the most information, but it's not accredited outside of California.
Oh, I see.
So that's important. Like, I like to kind of point those things out. University of San Francisco just created a master's program, which is you can get a master's in human sexuality, and it's accredited everywhere.
But okay.
Probably the biggest name school right now is Widener University.
That's
in Pennsylvania, actually.
Okay. And that's also credited nationally?
It is. It's got the highest recognition right now in terms of creating sex educators.
I just said nationally, but actually it makes me wonder, is it credited internationally?
Yes.
internationally. Great. Okay. Yes.
And so there's a lot of sex educators that are coming out of there right now. A lot of Brown students are actually in that program.
Brown University, Providence, Rhode Island.
That's right.
Good to know.
Now, in terms of like what you need to do for sex education, like that's just my background. That's how I went and chose to get my qualifications. But not everybody goes that route. So,
right. So, question, where did you do your 4,000 hours of sex education before you got certified?
Yeah, I worked for Planned Parenthood affiliates. And so I spent all of that time doing sex education in the high school systems, a little bit in middle schools, and a little bit with adult sex education in terms of talking to parents on how to talk to their kids about sexuality issues.
And just, I guess, because we're talking about adult sex education, in your center, the Center for Sexual Pleasure and Health.
She's batting her eyes every time she says that.
Well, because I'm so proud that I actually just remember it. You know, it's a great name. I'm glad I'm not messing it up.
No, you're doing a great job.
I don't want to do that
to you. And you're not hesitating with the pleasure portion of it, which is really
nice. It's
the
best part. Well, what are you going to offer there? Is it a walk-in thing? Are you going to offer workshops at the center? How's it going to work?
So the center's primary focus is to provide adults with a safe space to access sexuality information, which can be really challenging for people to find, whether it be online or in person.
Uh-huh.
And it will be a walk-in center for people to come in to access information from sexuality journals, medical journals, books. There'll also be workshops that are held 2 to 3 times a month, and then one-to-one information sessions.
And are you going to hire people to be there, or are you going to be there every day personally to help these people? How big is this enterprise?
It's just starting off with me right now. The plan is for the summer to start having interns come in and start staffing the center, so it's not just me that's there and working its way up.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
I'm definitely here to support you with that. I think it's going to be a great endeavor. And we definitely need something, I would say everywhere, but especially in Rhode Island. So I'm very excited about that and good luck.
Thank you. There's not many places like this that are available for it. We hear a lot about teen sexual information, like teen sexuality, high school sex education, but we don't often hear about adult sex education. So
true.
To my knowledge, this is only the fourth place in the country that is offering adult sex education, like a physical location for people to come in and access.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said earlier, I mean, this is a consensual thing. No one's going to force anyone to get this education, but at least it's there if anyone needs it.
Right.
So why don't we end the show with a word of the day? Do you have a word for us, Megan?
Yeah, the word, it's going to be a really simple one, but I think it's important because when we talk about sex education, a lot of people will be like, oh, are you like using things on people, or are you like touching people?
Right.
You know, because you're talking about sex, they may assume that I'm going to be performing sexual acts in front of people. So I just want to give people the definition of the word education.
Let's do it.
So education means the process of receiving or giving instruction or information or training about a particular field or subject. It's
okay.
Very, very simple. But if you notice, there's nothing like hands-on or inserting. And that's been a topic of conversation a lot with the opening of the Center for Sexual Pleasure and Health, is because we're providing education that maybe there's going to be some moaning that's coming out of the center. And just because you talk about something doesn't mean that you're advocating or you're doing everything that you talk about. You're merely providing people with resources that they can choose to use or not use.
Okay, well, perfect. Now that we've, you know, dotted the I's and cleared all this up, that's the end of our episode of Tearing It Off on Adult Sex Education.
As always, have fun playing.